You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Amistad Maupin's Tales of the City began as a newspaper serial in 1974. 40 years later, he has written The Days of Anna Madrigal, the ninth, and what he claims is the final book in his series that has chronicled the lives of gay and straight characters in San Francisco. It follows the 92-year-old matriarch who has been at the center of the series as she journeys back to her childhood home to take care of some unfinished business. It's published by Harper, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Amistad Maupin back to our show. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you again, Leonard.
Of course, when the sixth book in the series was published, you said that was the final one. So, should we believe you this time?
Yeah, you must this time around.
What's kept you coming back to these characters over four decades? Is it the characters or the fact that they represent changes in San Francisco?
I came back the first time with Michael Tolliver Lives because I had ended the series in 89 with an HIV-positive man. And I wanted him to be alive at the end of the series. I did not want to have to participate in the old cliche of the gay man dies at the end. So I left him in a not a happy situation in terms of his future, because at that point the assumption was that you would die if you were HIV positive.
No longer.
And when the cocktails came along and I looked around and there were a lot of people of my generation and a few years younger who were still alive, I wanted to celebrate that. A middle-aged man who is, as Michael puts it, facing mortality in the ordinary way. And I realized I had such a person in my repertory company in Michael. So I wrote a first-person novel about him, but then all the other characters started auditioning. And the next thing I knew, I pretty much had another Tales of the City novel on my hand.
As the series progressed, we learned that Mrs. Madrigal is a transsexual. Did you know from the start that she
was
a transsexual?
I had to hold off on it under the instructions of my editor at the Chronicle. Because for some reason, they thought that was the most shocking information of all, and that readers would be put off by it. That's what it was like 40 years ago.
At the same time, they still wanted you to do a series which had a lot of gay characters in it.
Well, they didn't want me to put gay characters in.
You just did.
They wanted me to write a series, and I told them it was about a new girl in town, and they didn't stop to think about what that might mean and who her friends might be. And I crept up on it, and it proved so popular that it gave me a certain amount of power in negotiating with my editors.
Mrs. Madrigal, as you called her in most of the early books, was the landlady of the boarding house at 28 Barbary Lane, where all the friends you've written about in the series first met. She seems loved by all of them. Is that why you chose to make her the protagonist of the final book?
Well, she's sort of the beating heart of the story anyway, I think. That's the way I see her. As a transgender person, she's sort of able to communicate with everyone and kind of know what's on their mind. And she's a parental figure who doesn't issue the usual parental judgments. So she's greatly loved by her tenants. And I think that's the reason she's loved by readers. She's almost an oracle. And of course, there's the memory of Olympia Dukakis's portrayal in the miniseries, which has been enormously useful to me because
didn't hurt Laura Linney's career either.
No, it certainly didn't. I saw Laura last night and her new baby, whose middle name is Armistead, something she surprised me with moments after the baby was born.
You say that the combination of Anna Madrigal's male and female sides have made her wise and intuitive.
Mm.
How so?
Well, most transgender people I know have they've had to look at the world from both sides, and because of that, they have a better instinct about what's on everybody's mind. They're not coming in with the ordinary gender assumptions that keep us in our little boxes and blind us to what's going on. I mean, the cliche in the modern world is that that men and women are mysteries unknown to each other. And I don't think a transgender person feels that way. They're operating from the heart, mostly, because they're having to declare themselves, they're having to be themselves in a world that doesn't want them to be.
On the other hand, the fact that she's transgendered is what leads to the unfinished business that that has her returning to her town, her hometown in Nevada.
Yes. That was fun, I have to say. She not only journeys back to Winnemucca, Nevada, where she grew up in a brothel,
during the Depression.
But
she's 93?
She's 93. And that allows me to go to 1936 Winnemucca and write out of time in a way that I've never done before. Everything's always been in real time. And I was able to explore a world that was utterly unfamiliar to me. And it was curiously liberating.
Because in the series has largely been about how San Francisco and the Bay Area has changed over the past four decades, although you do deal with that here as well. Barbary Lane, which was once an area that attracted nonconformists, is now being invaded by tech people and stockbrokers.
Yeah, well, you know, they want the pretty houses. You can't blame them. They want to live in the pretty places, and they've got the money, and that chases up the real estate prices. And most artists, myself included, started finding it very expensive to live there.
Is that why you moved?
It was
You're
a
now
factor.
In Santa Fe.
It was a factor. We could sell our house, get rid of a bad second mortgage, make life a little more simple for ourselves, and have a brand new experience. We could have moved to some less desirable part of San Francisco, although, like New York, there are very few of those left.
Everything has become gentrified.
Everything is gentrified. We could have done that, but we chose...
Or Walnut Creek or some other place outside of San
Well, Francisco. Suburbia has never appealed to me.
Isn't Santa Fe just all suburbia?
No. Well, there are suburban neighborhoods. There are gated communities. But we live in the country, basically, about 8 miles north.
I want to get back to writing about the past, which requires research. How much research can you do into the brothels of the past in Nevada?
We have a very simple tool at our command called the Internet. I actually Googled 1930s whorehouse menu, and I was given a list of the services that were offered there. There was a lot that I could find on the Internet.
Well, the mother who was at the brothel doesn't seem to accept her son's sexuality, despite the fact that she is a sex worker. How did Anna deal with that when she was young and a boy named Andy?
Well, by having a friend there at the brothel, the oldest girl, who's 45, is really his mother. The way I mean, she loves him and treats him and accepts him for who he is. I don't know whether or not Mother Mucca, as she's called, Andy's actual biological mother, is even aware of his transgender nature. She's too busy. She has plans for him. She wants him to marry a rich girl, and she doesn't even stop to think that that might not be on his agenda.
Now, transgender is different than homosexuality. Often transgender people were actually heterosexual, often married before they have the operation.
Yeah, transgender, as I point out in the book, basically, not in any direct way, but there's a trans man in the book who's female to male transgender, and he's gay. He is attracted to men. He was born female. He lives as a man, and he's attracted to a man. So he, in essence, is a gay transgendered person. Anna Madrigal, on the other hand, is straight in that, and her crushes over the years have been on men. Their gender and sexuality, they're utterly different things.
It's very complicated.
I don't think.
Well, I mean, we're all so different, and we have different reasons for acting the way that we do. It's hard for me to understand why certain people do certain things. I'm not just talking about sexually, but I'm talking about in a lot of different ways how they come to be who they are. But I guess the real issue, the real thing is just understand that people come to these things because they have to.
Yeah, we arrive at our own identities. I was with my friend Alan Cumming recently at an event in Santa Fe, and Dr. Ruth Westheimer was there. And I think of her as a very, you know, she was a pioneer, really, in talking about a lot of these matters. And Alan introduced his husband, Grant, to Dr. Ruth, and he said, and he put it that way, he said, "This is my husband, Grant." And she looked at Alan and says, "Does that make you the wife?" And I've had a lot of intelligent people who you'd think would have figured that out ask that question when I use it, because they're so used to dividing everything on heterosexual lines. But it's pretty simple. If you're of the same gender, then both of you are, is a husband, or both of you is a wife.
I'm talking with Armstead Maupin. His latest book is the ninth and final book, novel in the series, Tales of the City. This one, The Days of Anna Madrigal. There are young people in the book, and you've obviously had a lot of fun with Shauna, who's 29, a kind of granddaughter-type figure to Anna. She published a very successful novel completely in text speak.
Yeah. I actually thought that was a good idea when I wrote it. I got very excited about it. A sort of thriller with teenage girls texting each other that grows more and more grotesque. In, you know, the simple abbreviation of these terrible things that they're happening, namely the torment of one of their classmates.
And Michael Tolliver, another Barbary Lane original, something of an uncle to Shauna, says of her book, "The cruelty is more pronounced because everything is abbreviated."
Yeah, well, I think it would be. Shauna is very serious about the novel. She says she ends up being, you know, she sees herself as a literary experimentalist. And she says, but she was treated more like a Kardashian than a Kerouac.
Now, you've said that you put a lot of yourself into your characters. How much did you draw from your life in creating this story? I realize it's not autobiographical.
It's not autobiographical, but I did go to the Burning Man Festival in Nevada, which is one of the big moments in the novel, and I tried to capture that singular experience.
But how much of you is in Anna? She's 93-year-old transsexual who's had a number of strokes.
Have not had those, but it's funny. Once you pass 65, you kind of enter geezer land, and you relate to everyone that age and older. So it was not that hard to imagine what it would be like to be her. And so I did it.
You talked before about how things have changed in recent years, and we're seeing more and more states legalizing gay marriage, including New Mexico. You live in Santa Fe now.
Mm.
Is that just coincidental? I mean, did you move there to some degree because you also felt that it would be a friendly place?
I had someone accuse me of starting it, which is rather insulting to the activists in New Mexico who have been working very hard for a long time to make it happen. It's just happening everywhere. And New Mexico has a pretty civilized population. People there are very live and let live, I've noticed. And I find it very easy to live among the native population and the Hispanic population as an Anglo, as we're called there, and not feel any particular judgment about it. They know that Chris and I are a married couple living out at the end of the road, and we fit in just fine.
I've heard that Olympia Dukakis liked the book and asked if you were planning to adapt it.
Yeah.
Would she like to play Anna again?
Oh, yeah. She said, "How old is she again?" And I said, 92. And she said, "I can play that." She's 82.
Well, she can play old just as she's played young.
She can play anything. She's a miracle. And of course, I would love that to happen. It's just a question of who would produce it and how it would come about.
Well, the adaptations of the first three books were a big success, weren't they?
They were. They would have been a bigger success if PBS hadn't run away from the first one after criticism from the American Family Association. We moved it to Showtime at that point and had to film in Canada. I liked those second two miniseries, but we lost a certain continuity in the process.
And I suspect Laura Linney would not have a role in this new film.
Well, if it were a film, there's a very minor, there's a cameo from Laura Linney's character in this book. That was been one of the challenges over the years. That's is who moves to center stage and who's on the sideline. And my last Tales of the City novel, number 8, was Marianne in Autumn, and it was very much her story. And now I've shifted to Anna with Marianne and others coming in as they will.
And now that you've finished the series, moving on to something else totally?
I'm looking to create a one-man show. I have this urge in my old age to entertain an audience and tell stories. I do that anyway when I appear with my books. And I'd like to polish a little dog and pony show that I could take on the road, probably with my dog and my husband, and have some fun with that.
Amistad Maupin's latest book, the last in the Tales of the City series, is The Days of Anna Madrigal. It is published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's a pleasure, Leonard.